Hi, it's Mountain Edition. All the news from the week here in the Roaring Fork Valley and from around the state coming at you in the next half hour. I'm Zoe Rome, and I'm here with Kristen Kay. Hi, Kristen.
Hey, Zoe. So this week, a new report encourages state governors to look towards the arts as a way to stimulate small-town economies.
And I spoke to the Vice President for Sustainability at Aspen Ski Co. about compromises in climate change.
And Nobel laureate Arthur Ashkin gave a lecture in Aspen about creating the world's smallest tweezers.
Those stories, interviews, and more coming up on Mountain Edition. A new metal arch will mark the beginning of the Rio Grande Artway in Carbondale this spring.
The archway will be a large sculpture meant to capture the character and history of Carbondale. It will be constructed partly out of reclaimed railroad ties and bicycles. It will span the artway at the intersection of Highway 133 and the Rio Grande, near the entrance of downtown Carbondale. Shannon Muse from Paradise Glass will head up a community art project for the archway. She'll offer fused glass classes to the public in order to create nearly 30 glass flowers that will don the sculpture. Muse says it's a chance to come try the somewhat obscure art of glass fusing.
We'll be able to make a lot of experimental pieces, and you don't often have the opportunity to experiment with the medium.
The community glass fusing workshops will be held on Mondays from 2 to 4 at Paradise Glass.
Nobel laureate and physicist Arthur Ashkin gave a lecture on his invention at the Wheeler this week. Ashkin won the Nobel Prize in Physics last year for his optical tweezers, microscopic beams of light that can pick up and move tiny objects like cells and atoms.
With one beam, I can manipulate a single atom, pick it up, look at it, put it down.
His invention laid the groundwork for numerous discoveries in physics and medicine. Ashkin is 96, the prize's oldest recipient. He's currently undergoing treatment for lymphoma and was unable to attend December's Nobel ceremonies in Oslo. So his talk marked Aspen's first ever Nobel lecture.
Aspen City Manager Steve Barwick agreed to resign after being asked to do so by Aspen City Council Monday night. The council met in executive session for about 45 minutes to review Barwick's contract. He left immediately after that session. Allison Bechtesh reports.
Barwick's tenure ends just weeks after Assistant City Manager Barry Crook resigned. Council met for 45 minutes last night to review Barwick's contract. Aspen Mayor Steve Skadron announced the change after the executive session, but no reason was given.
With regard to the city manager, a majority of city council has requested the resignation of the city manager. Mr. Barwick has agreed to do so.
Barwick wrote a statement detailing the difficulties of serving the public, stating that a leader in his position should, quote, never, ever seek or accept credit for any organizational success and always accept the blame when things go wrong. He signed the letter Happy Trails and Deep Powder, y'all. The terms of the resignation will be detailed in a public meeting at a future date. Allison Bechtesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
Glenwood Springs wants more visitors to stay for longer during the shoulder seasons. The city's Chamber Resort Association was just given the go-ahead to spend $200,000 on digital ads in the greater Dallas area. To learn more about why Dallas, I'm joined in the studio by Wyatt Orme. Hi, Wyatt.
Hey, Zoe.
So how did we get here? Why Dallas?
First of all, because people from Dallas already come here. That's probably not too surprising for anybody listening. If you just look at the license plates around here, you can discern that Texans like coming to Colorado. But there's also data to back this up. Lisa Langer, who works for the Glenwood Springs Chamber Resort Association, says that they want to capitalize on the popular destination that Colorado already is with Texans.
They like Colorado. They like to get out of the heat in the summer. They like to come here and ski in the winter. So I think that we have a really good shot with this.
Another component of this is that advertising in Dallas is significantly cheaper than in other big cities. So $200,000 will buy more ad space in Dallas than in Chicago, say, and more ads mean more eyeballs, which means more potential visitors.
Glenwood is already a popular tourist destination, but what does the Chamber want from these new visitors?
They want people to come during the week in the shoulder seasons. From November to March, it's actually pretty slow in Glenwood Springs. People from the Front Range are always coming up here, but it's mostly on the weekends, and they're back to work on Monday. Lisa Langer calls these the weekend warriors, and they're no help on the weekdays, and that's why Langer and her colleagues are looking beyond Colorado to try and fill the lull a little bit.
And what's the strategy to advertise in Dallas?
Langer says that Glenwood's pitch is water. It's come enjoy the hot springs, come do fun things on the Colorado River. So they'll pay an advertising agency in Denver to make these ads. And all the ads that are made will all be digital. So if someone in Dallas Googles rafting, say, then Glenwood Springs might pop up. The ads will also appear on travel websites like Expedia and Hotels.com, and there will also be video and audio ads.
All right, thanks, Wyatt.
You're welcome.
On Tuesday, two-term Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper was replaced by incoming Democrat and former Congressman Jared Polis at a ceremony at the state capitol. State Capitol reporter Scott Franz spoke to Hickenlooper about his time in office and future plans.
Describe your most rewarding moment as governor.
Certainly when we passed civil unions and recognize that love is love and that people should be free to love whoever they want. That was a momentous step forward. But I also, you know, while I was governor, I got to play a song on the stage at Red Rocks where it was a sold out show with Old Crow Medicine Show. And I love music enough that, you know, when I sang my verse and the crowd roared in my face, that was about as good as it gets. So, you know, there are those parts that are connected to government. And sometimes those parts are just connected to opportunity.
Yeah, those sound like amazing moments. Can you also talk about, on the flip side, the most challenging moment you had?
That first 4 years that I was governor from 2011 to 2015, I mean, we had the worst droughts since the Depression, the worst wildfires in the history of the state. We had the worst flood history of the state. We had, I mean, I went to 50 funerals in my first 4 years. It seemed like it was every few weeks. But I guess probably the hardest one was going out to the movie theater, the Cinemark in Aurora, after that shooting and seeing the videotape of what the crime scene looked like. I mean, there was popcorn everywhere and Coke, empty container, you know, plastic cups of Coke and water and blood everywhere. It was just a very, very, very difficult period. You know, we spent the next couple of days just going to visit the surviving victims in hospitals. There were in five or six hospitals by that point. That's something you never forget.
What do you think is going to be the legacy that you leave behind or that you hope people will remember about your administration?
When I came in, we were 40th in job creation. And we said a couple of things. We went all over the state. We went to all 64 counties and said, we're not going to create a strong economy just for one part of the state. We want to do it for everybody. And we made that commitment. We went to the West Slope. We, again, went to every single county. And for the last 2 years, according to U.S. News and World Report, according to USA Today, we're the number one economy in America. And I think when the results come in this year, we'll be the number one rural economy as well. There's a confidence now in Colorado, a swagger. People are kind of proud to be from Colorado. Young people from all over the country want to move here because it's a place where we do work together and we solve problems. And just look at the nightly news and you'll see where that's not happening in Washington. And that's, I feel intensely proud of that.
You've seen a lot from this office. What advice have you given to the incoming governor?
Jared Polis really doesn't need any advice from me. He's got, I think, the kind of key ingredients, the qualities that are going to allow him to be a great governor. He's super smart. He works hard. He is innately curious. And, you know, he's good in a very powerful way. He's selfless. I'll tell you a story. When I first, he got elected, and the next day we had a meeting here in my office. And the first thing he said was, "What do you think your most important legacies are that I should be supporting and finding more resources for?" No governor-elect has ever, I've never heard of someone saying that. Usually the new governor-elect comes in and they're trying to figure out where they can get resources for their pet projects so they get reelected. I think Jared is genuinely selfless. I think he wants to do the best job he can. I mean, he's got an ego. He wants to be great. He wants to be the best governor ever. That's a good thing.
Have you given any more thought to your presidential ambitions?
Well, my wife and I have spent a lot of time in the last 6 months talking with each other and with closest friends and family, trying to sort through, you know, is there traction? Do people in Iowa and New Hampshire and America, is there an appetite for the kinds of collaborative solutions that we've created in Colorado. And that notion that we want to have a strong economy, but we want to have an economy that where everybody gets a fair chance at making their own version of the American dream. And, you know, people say, well, you're from Colorado, it's a flyover state, and Colorado's too small. Your home state is, you've got to raise a ton of money to be able to run for president. You won't be able to do it in Colorado. Well, that's what we're trying to figure out.
Thank you so much for your time today, Governor. I appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure, and good luck on your first session with the General Assembly.
The first in a series of exhibits featuring artists from Colorado's 23 state-certified creative districts opens Friday in Glenwood Springs.
Impressions and Ink is the first in the year-long series, which travels to Colorado Mountain College campuses all over the state. It features prints from artists from Carbondale, Steamboat Springs, Crested Butte, and Paonia. Colorado Mountain College teamed up with Carbondale Arts. Amy Kimberly from Carbondale Arts says the creative districts have discussed the idea of a collaborative art show for years now. And she's excited at the prospect of Carbondale artists finding an audience outside of their community.
It's really wonderful to be able to give these artists exposure in other markets.
Impressions in Ink opens Friday at the CMC Art Share Gallery. The next show in the series will feature watercolor works. It opens in May. You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Kristen Kay.
And I'm Zoe Rome. Kristen, dedicated Aspen Public Radio listeners are obviously tapped into the news, but what they may not know is that we go deeper with our slate of public affairs programming. There's Mountain Edition, Morning Edition, and Valley Roundup. Aspen Public Radio goes beyond the headlines to bring you insights and interviews from around the valley.
That's right. And there's a full schedule of our programming online at aspenpublicradio.org.
When it comes to the health of our watershed, it turns out not all snow is created equal. Snow is pretty simple. It's made of air and water, and lately we've been getting a lot of what's known as Colorado Champagne Powder, which is great for skiing. But, says Christina Medved with the Roaring Fork Conservancy, it doesn't have the same payoff for our rivers.
When we get these awesome powder days, it's wonderful for skiing in it, but the water content is very low.
Different types of snow have different levels of water content, and Colorado Champagne Powder is actually pretty dry. So even though we're seeing more snow than last year, this fluffy stuff is mostly air, which of course doesn't melt. This week, the snowpack clocked in at 107%, which is just barely above average. And according to the Roaring Fork Conservancy, it'll take more than a couple powder days to ease the current drought.
Democrat Jared Polis was sworn in at the state capitol yesterday as the 43rd governor of Colorado. Capitol correspondent Scott Franz was at the ceremony, is on the line with me now. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Allison.
So Polis is the first openly gay elected governor in the country, and that was clearly on display at his inaugural.
It was. His partner, Marlon Reese, held the Bible as he was sworn in. The couple has two children and were both present. The ceremony was opened by music from the Denver Gay Men's Chorus and the colors of the rainbow underneath the podium, too. There were some other things that were unique about this ceremony. His first action as governor was actually to take a selfie, and the inaugural program was printed on hemp paper.
Oh my goodness. So we are living in modern times, I suppose.
Yes.
Did he lay out his agenda for his time in office?
You know, he didn't offer any specifics today. Instead, he teased his State of the State address, which is on Thursday. That's where he'll really provide some policy specifics. But he did talk about how he's going to approach the job of being governor.
There will always, always be seats at the table for those with constructive input from different perspectives. And though our perspectives may differ, we will work hard to create solutions together.
Then he touched on a lot of the themes that he campaigned on, such as the state's education system and pivoting toward renewable energy.
We will get to work building an education system that provides every child with the opportunity to unlock a bright future that they deserve. We will get to work building a healthcare system that ensures families don't have to choose between losing their homes and losing their healthcare or their life.
You were in the crowd as well. What stood out to you about the ceremony?
Well, one of the first things I noticed was security was very tight. There were police watching from nearby rooftops, and it's always exciting to hear cannon fire reverberating throughout downtown Denver. You could also see janitors and other workers inside the Capitol taking breaks to watch all the action from the third floor windows overlooking the ceremony.
All right. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
That was Capitol correspondent Scott Franz talking about yesterday's inauguration of Governor Jared Polis.
The National Governors Association is encouraging state governors to look towards the arts as a way to stimulate small town economies. Here to speak with us about this is arts and culture reporter Kristen Kay. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Zoe.
So why is the NGA encouraging state governors to think about arts and culture in rural areas?
So it's no secret a lot of small towns are facing economic uncertainty. Jobs and industries that used to support those areas are changing or disappearing entirely. So here's where the arts come in, according to the National Governors Association, or NGA. So they worked with the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Assembly of State Arts Agencies to create this guide for state governors on how the arts can revitalize rural economies. This has to do with both bringing in tourists and with retaining residents. So a strong art scene makes communities more attractive places to live, and many small towns struggle to keep younger generations around. This report says that rural counties that are home to performing arts organizations experience 3 times the population growth than counties without them.
That's impressive. So what can local and state governments do to stimulate the arts?
One thing is to designate certain places as cultural or creative districts as a way to attract artists and visitors. For example, Carbondale is a Colorado creative district. That means the town gets financial support and special training and like networking opportunities with other creative districts. Governments can also support cultural heritage or arts trails. And once again, we do have that in place here on the Western Slope. We have the Colorado Creative Corridor. It was launched last year to bring visitors to rural creative districts. Carbondale is on that loop, along with nearby towns like Paonia and Ridgeway. And states and their leaders can also make their state friendly to creative institutions by doing things like subsidizing studios and performance spaces.
So what's next when it comes to Colorado and arts in rural areas?
So the NGA will release an even more detailed playbook for governors to use to help develop rural arts and culture. And of course, we have a new governor here in Colorado, Jared Polis. So we'll see how the state continues to try and innovate when it comes to arts and culture and the economic benefits that come with that sector.
All right. Thanks, Kristen.
Thanks, Zoe.
That was arts reporter Kristen Kay speaking about a new report released on arts and rural prosperity.
The Arts and Culture Desk at Aspen Public Radio is funded by the Stefan Edlis and Gail Neeson Foundation with a mission to support the arts, community, and outreach.
Bob Rankin is changing jobs. Currently, he represents Garfield, Rio Blanco, and Moffat counties at the State House. But later this month, he'll replace Randy Baumgardner in the District 8 Senate seat. Wyatt Orm spoke with Representative Rankin, soon to be Senator Rankin, on Friday.
Can you describe the district that you'll be representing as a senator?
Yes, it's the 3 counties that I currently represent. It goes then to the east of that, picks up Rout County, which is Steamboat Springs, and then it also picks up Summit County.
So how do you feel about kind of representing a bigger area?
It will be a challenge. The big difference is, I think, that it includes some very popular tourist areas. There are ski areas in the wintertime, but in the summer they're very busy as well. So it's going to be an interesting combination of very rural areas and resort areas.
Politically speaking, is it more diverse than what you currently represent?
I think it is. Resort areas tend to be a different demographic than some of the small rural towns, so yes. Mm-hmm.
So if a lot of your constituents, say, have a different opinion about how, you know, public land should be used, do you feel like you have room to compromise?
I've been pretty active in public land issues ever since I've been here. I ran a bill in 2015 to ask the state to help the counties deal more directly or more comprehensively with the federal government on use of public lands. That's been very popular. I'd like to extend that. I see it as some new challenges, but an extension of what I've already been working on.
Who's going to replace you as the representative from House District 57?
Well, there'll be a vacancy committee. I think they plan to convene on February 5th. And actually, Joyce Rankin, my wife, currently State Board of Education member, has applied for that.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have any say on who gets picked for that position?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah. As a senator, how are your roles and responsibilities going to change, do you think?
I think it'll be roughly the same. I'll just be working through the Senate. I think about 80% of my work will continue, maybe 85% continue to be budget related. The other issues I want to continue to work on are really the cost of health care in our region, and it's not a partisan issue. So I want to, and so that's an example of what I'll do outside of the budget committee work.
Right. For the past 9 months or so, right, you've been heading a committee to figure out how to repeal the Gallagher Amendment. Will that work continue?
You know, we are looking at trying to repeal the Gallagher Amendment and replace it with something. And that's a heavy lift. We have some bills that are ready to be introduced, but we're trying to make sure we have the right approach, you know, that will appeal to all parts of the state.
Right. The Democrats control the House, they control the Senate, and they also control the governor's mansion. What's it like to be a Republican at the state capitol today?
Well, I will say that on the bills that I have worked on and the issues that I worked on last year, the Democrats are still reaching out to me and including me in those bills. So I don't feel pushed aside.
You don't feel pessimistic that some of the initiatives that you kind of spoke about during your campaign, during your reelection, that those are going to be harder to achieve because of the majorities that Democrats have?
I do not. I was not working on anything that I think is now a dead end because of that.
Representative Rankin, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Wyatt, always a pleasure.
That was Bob Rankin, who represents House District 57. Later this month, Rankin will become a state senator.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Kristen Kay.
And I'm Zoe Rome. Aspen Public Radio has a new show, Airtime. It's extended conversations with interesting people. This week, a human rights lawyer fighting sex trafficking in Colorado, Nobel laureate Arthur Ashkin explains his prize-winning invention, and an extended look at SKECO's sustainability report.
It's quite a lineup. You can find that and all of our programming online at aspenpublicradio.org.
Aspen residents could be eligible for a $55 tax refund. Applicants must have been registered to vote in Aspen for all of 2018 and prove their Aspen address matches their voter registration. The refund reimburses residents for about as much as they would spend paying sales tax on a year's worth of groceries. The food tax refund began in 1970, and at that time, the refund was just $7. It was put in place alongside the passage of a 1% city sales tax to convince voters to pass the new tax. Residents can apply through Aspen's website or in person at City Hall. Applications are due April 15th.
4 years ago, a large amount of water flowed through the Colorado River Delta in Mexico after being dry for decades. And as Luke Runyon reports, a new study says it's had a lasting effect.
In addition to briefly connecting the river to the ocean, the release, known as the pulse flow, also let some life return to the delta. The University of Arizona's Carl Flessa led the research effort. He was surprised how it contributed to renewed efforts within Mexican communities to restore the delta to what it once was.
The other surprise I'll say is how fast the vegetation down there can grow once it gets the right amount of water at the right time and in the right place.
Fless's team documented rapid growth in cottonwood trees and counted a high number of birds in active restoration sites. Since construction of large dams in the 1960s, little water from the Colorado River has flowed through its historic channel, past the U.S.-Mexico border. I'm Luke Runyon.
Jared Polis is already receiving petitions and policy requests from environmental groups. Capitol coverage reporter Scott Franz has more.
About a dozen activists went to the Capitol urging Polis to halt all new oil and gas drilling operations in the state until stronger regulations are passed. Ann Lee Foster is with Colorado Rising, one of the groups pursuing the moratorium along with increased setbacks.
Every single day, more permits are getting pushed through at the state, are being rubber stamped by the COGCC. Every day, more drilling is occurring next to homes and next to schools.
Foster says more than 5,000 people signed a petition supporting a pause in oil and gas permitting. Meanwhile, some state lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have expressed opposition to the idea. Democratic State Senator Angela Williams says the policy would hurt oil and gas workers. She would rather see lawmakers work with the oil and gas industry to come up with any new regulations. From the state capitol, I'm Scott Franz.
Aspen Skiing Company released its annual sustainability report last week, and the format was different than past years. I spoke with Auden Schindler, Senior Vice President of Sustainability, about the trade-offs that SkiCo makes when it's reporting on and mitigating its own role in climate change.
Our goal is to educate our employees and customers and the public about our philosophy and about where we came from and what we're trying to do. So we said, well, what about a comic book? You know, our past issues have been really information dense. What if we distilled it to almost nothing and just tried to get the message across?
What trade-offs are you making when you represent it in kind of a more digestible format as opposed to something that is harder to read but is a bit more substantive?
There's the risk of seeming lightweight. What we do is we link the hard data on carbon to our website. Essentially, we're saying, look, we're as serious as anybody, but our goal here is to convey some basic information about what we're doing.
You guys mentioned that you banned plastic straws this year. I'm wondering, what are other areas you guys are really looking to cut down in that are maybe a little bit less flashy?
The comment about plastic straws was a joke that got exactly at what you're saying, which is, it doesn't really matter. These are things that don't really do much, but we do them to keep people going and to keep people enthusiastic. You know, even a cynic like myself has realized these are important things as we work on the much, much bigger, much more important issues like how do we get our utility to produce more clean energy? How do we get state policy aligned? How do we push on national policy? Our whole vision is that we're pushing on the biggest levers we can find and wielding the power that exists in and from Aspen. But we're always going to do little things that people can understand so that, frankly, so they can wake up in the morning in the face of real significant environmental challenges like climate change and still feel that we're moving forward.
That was Auden Schindler, Senior Vice President of Sustainability for SkiCo, speaking about the 2018 sustainability report that was released last week. That's all for Mountain Edition this week. I'm Zoe Rome.
And I'm Kristen Kay. You can find a full archive of our stories and interviews online at aspenpublicradio.org and stream all of our live programming, too.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.